Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And what we're doing here is we're attempting to add Alan Watt to the call via Skype calling, and it's just not working, possibly because AFR, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we have to do some producing on air because we're having some technical difficulties with the line, and we've got to somehow get Alan connected. He didn't want to call in because it's a toll call. We can't call him because the call line's fracked. So what I'm trying to do now is call him on the Skype. Find a solution. You know, that's what you do, ladies and gentlemen. So AFR, if you're on the phone with him right now, trying to convince him to come on and everything like that, just like hang up or add him onto the Skype call. If it's at all possible, that would be quite nice. I'm trying to bring him in through the Skype now. Still not working. Okay, well, it's been 2 years trying to contact Alan Watt and have him finally get back to me. And now I can't do it. You've got to be freaking kidding me. You know, this happens, ladies and gentlemen, where, you know, you build something up, you promote it all over the place, and then at the last minute, something devilish and nasty comes in and snatches all your hard work and fate away from you. You all know what that's like, don't you? Of course you do, because you're a slave to the New World Order, just like me. People think that as soon as you're a radio host or fighting against the New World Order, that you're suddenly not a slave to it. I'm sorry. At all times, at no point in your life, have you actually ever really been truly 100% free. Okay? Even if you've had successes in court and so on and so forth, exposed in scumbaggery, there is no true freedom. Not currently. it is possible to bring it back if it ever existed in the first place. Alan should be calling us in now. So if you're on the line there, Alan, speak up. But I don't think he is. He hasn't called in yet. It's quite actually frustrating, man. Yeah, I'm really disappointed about this. And I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who tuned in expecting to hear Alan Watt. And all you hear is me just going, what the heck is going on? You know what I'm saying? It's a terrible situation. The difficulty. And dealing with difficulty. You know, normally, I think it's good to get your frustrations out. You know, I tend to, you know, if it's in private, not around people or what have you, and something goes terribly wrong, I just kind of let loose, you know, the yelling, the screaming, the extremely, really out of control kind of an Eastwood, you know? And it's like that for a minute or two, and then all the anger's gone, and it's like, back to normal, peaceful and serene. Okay, I've got to figure out something here. I should be trying to... what are we going to talk about with Alan Watt? Well, what do you speak about with Alan Watt? You know? You're talking about a man with immense knowledge in many, many ways. In a wide variety of subjects. In intense knowledge of the elite. AFR, if you click the add person or add people to the call, and then you type in Alan's number with the plus one, the area code, that should actually be able to bring him into the Skype call, I think. I hope. One of the topics that was of particular interest to me regarding Alan Watt was his knowledge of Illuminati breeding programs. I'm just going to dial that little number in there. You know, why is it that when you're a conspiracy theorist, everything starts to make you think that there's some kind of conspiracy, right? You know, the Skype drops out or some kind of technical issue comes up. Automatically, people assume it's the New World Order. It's the New World Order. Instead of their own incompetence and their own technical malfunctions.
Hey, Vinny, we have him on the line, sir.
Huh? We got him on the line?
Yes, sir, we do.
Can you hear me? Alan, what? No? I can't hear him. We've been told now that Alan is on the line. But I can't hear him. Unless, of course, I'm supposed to unmute him with my little unmutable wackadoo thingy here. Hold on 1 second, ladies and gentlemen. Man, this sounds like a remarkably unprofessional broadcast. An absolutely unprofessional broadcast. And, yeah, I think even when things aren't your fault, it's a good idea to just take responsibility for them and find a solution. You know what I'm saying? And this thing won't log in. Okay. That's great. All right. Let me see if we can list the technical malfunctions on the show so far today, ladies and gentlemen. So, firstly, our caller line, for which we call people and then have them on the radio show, is messing up. So we can't call Alan. And then secondly, the Skype won't call him. It won't add him to the call. Doesn't matter what we do with the combination of numbers or anything like that. And then thirdly, Alan actually does call in, but you can't actually log in. For some reason, it won't even allow you to click the button, log in, to the conference room.
Hello?
Okay? Oh, Alan, we've heard you.
You got me? Yeah.
We've got you.
Okay.
It is remarkably wonderful and absolutely fabulous to hear your voice at last. We've lost 10 minutes of airtime already, and I was about to pop my eyeballs
back,
out of my
know,
skull with frustration.
Bell kept saying you were busy.
So, thank you very much for being here in the first place. And my first question is,
what is your website so that people can go and view your material. And the second question is, could you actually give us a bit of a background about from you growing up, how you got into these various fields of research for which you're so noted for today?
Yes. The website is cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And on that site, you'll see all of the other sites I have listed, including Alan Watts Sentinel.eu. But I got into it very early on because growing up in Britain during the time I grew up, I could sense there were massive changes. I could sense that there was mass unemployment, I think, since World War II, probably, maybe to the present. But in the working class areas, I wondered why everyone was fighting about basic money for rent and things like that. Because you've grown with your pals around the different houses, their mums and dads, and everyone was kind of tense, stressed out. And I realized something was vastly wrong with this system of something we're getting taught at school was called Great Britain, that fought all these wars and got a massive empire, and yet across the country, and that was England, Scotland, Ireland, and Northern Ireland, and Wales as well. People were on almost fixed incomes, and it really was a fixed type of system, a rigged system on how much can you pay the average person just to sustain them and no more. By the way, we're going back into that's austerity. But it was a rigged system. And then I found out at school that the history I was being taught there did not tally up with the history that I could find in the big archives and the big libraries around me. So I had passes to get in. So I did awfully well in school, so I got adult passes even at the age of 5 and 6, you know. And so I got into the old books. Many of them, by the way, went back to the 1700s, even old newspapers from the 1800s. And the versions were given, even about Scotland, were completely different of the modern histories. And I realized early on, when I caught on to sociology, basically, and the writings of big players, who attended world meetings to do with cultural organizations and the future they were having. Lots of world conferences. When you read the books of Bertrand Russell, H.G. Wells even, who was a propagandist for this organization, it really was at the top at that time, then I realized that they wanted a planned society, and that's what we had, a planned society. So most folk live in a little bubble, and Huxley said this too, and we do. We grew up in a little bubble. Every age group is catered to right through your life. They know exactly what you want at 5, what you want at 10 or 15, and the sexual changes too, and libido, how to use it, how to keep years of your life wasted, in a sense, as you just go around and just be a good consumer and producer and a good taxpayer. And that's what it boiled down to, planned by big forces that were way above anything you'd ever be taught at school. And eventually, of course, I got into much, much deeper stuff, and I read as many books as I could, and I found out that, sure enough, they had a big world agenda. They always had it. It was on the go before I was born, and you can find the old organizations that became, for instance, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, American branch, and other branches are called Council on Foreign Relations. You found that they were descended from the Alfred Milner group, Lord Alfred Milner, and Cecil Rhodes, who was his partner and co-founder, and along with Lord Rothschild at that time. They founded what they were going to do with an empire, create an empire from Britain, grab the world's resources for themselves. They brought in the top eugenicists of their day, the early 20th century. And they even back then, by the way, they had already decided that we would have a post-industrial era, and they would farm out a lot of the work to different countries where the labor was cheap, and therefore they'd have mass unemployment down the road. What to do with the people? They worked out in think tanks, because they own hundreds and hundreds of think tanks working on special areas of society to advise all governments now across the world. And they said they had to bring in world wars, eliminate cultures, most cultures, and eventually create some form of new culture for the general masses of population. So this was all worked out, but they needed world wars to make it happen. So World War I, which no one can make any sense of, really, as such a massive war over an Archduke getting assassinated. It wasn't that at all. But they wanted that war, and you found out you had young Turks involved, they had young Italians involved. These were all revolutionary movements that were started up and funded by a group in London, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and the Rhodes Foundation, to get the young to rebel within their own countries, to bring in something called democracy. Now, democracy is a very elastic term, and it's never got a fixed definition, by the way. It never will have. It's a front. But revolutions are often necessary to get all this going. And after World War One, and during World War One, they set up the League of Nations as a form, an embryo for a world government, with its own World Health Organization and everything for world vaccinations, all these things, and even a food distribution system, which we still have in the Ministry of Agriculture for the United Nations. But it wasn't enough. And H.G. Wells, who was a propagandist, a paid propagandist, by the way, for this organization, there's lots of non-fiction books out there who believed in eugenics and the proles, you might say, the proletariat. He said after World War One, in one of his own books, just before he died, he says, we need another world war. The people haven't given up their sovereignty to the global natural elite who have the right to lead the world. So we need another war, he said. So we got one. And out of that came the United Nations. And doing all the propaganda documentaries put out by Path News and many, many other shows that they put out for cinema at that time and radio, that's the first time people kept hearing about the United Nations are moving against the Axis powers and so on. And after that, of course, it becomes more and more common. But grabbing the world's resources, even from the days of Cecil Rhodes, was a primary goal. That's why he took over South Africa. And then he got the British government involved as an excuse to troop it and police it. And then the taxpayers of Britain ended up paying for all the railroad lines across there. They already did the same with India. The taxpayers fund all these wars so that the elite who lived at that time in London could become incredibly, incredibly wealthy and have more further wars for grabbing world resources. We're still going through the resource wars today, by the way, right across the Middle East, which were planned, at least published in the 90s, by the Project for New American Century Group. So we're indeed going through a complete change of everything. And
I just wanted to say as well to those who might be a little bit unfamiliar with the Council on Foreign Relations and it was a project for the New American Century we were talking about. They wanted a new Pearl Harbor, and they got it on 9/11. Alan Watt is my guest. We'll be right back. Bonkers. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that recognises that things are just a little bit bonkers. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio from the fabulously fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated island chains nation paradise of New Zealand, where the rad level is so high that everybody now no longer suffers from an economic crisis because of a special part-time job they all have as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is Alan Watt, the illustrious, the famous from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. Now, one of these perspectives I often miss out on, Alan, is speaking to the elders who have not only seen a lot through their life, but elders like yourself that have actually been aware throughout the entirety of that life. I've met some people who are only just woken up like about 3-4 years ago and they're pushing 50. And I look at you and I see an entire lifetime of accumulated awareness and knowledge. And I think this is part of the reason why your radio show and the subjects that you talk about and the way that you talk about them is in fact so compelling. And if you wouldn't mind, just please continue.
You've got to have some background and at least been aware of the changes that they were living through. And I questioned everything. I can remember when I was really small, sort of toddling around, and miniskirts came in, for instance, just a thing like miniskirts. And the BBC, I think it was the only station we had back then, one station, was promoting it on top of the Pops and things like that. And they would interview the sudden rock stars that came out of nowhere, the pop stars. And they'd interview these guys falling off chairs, really stoned out their heads. Now, this was at the time, too, when you had Timothy O'Leary going around pushing the drugs, and even Aldous Huxley with his Doors of Perception, all aimed at teenagers to try the drugs out. Lots of articles just bust out in the mainstream newspaper, which is all controlled, again, by members of the Royal Institute for International Affairs or Council on Foreign Relations. They own the cartel, still do. And so I thought, well, why would the establishment at the top and people on the BBC with Oxford voices, because that's all they employed by the, at that time, by the way, it was only people from Oxford. You had to get that to get into the BBC or get a job. Why were they promoting what seemed to be the disruption of the culture and society? And I had to dig deeper, and I went back into the Roaring Twenties, where the same thing had been tried before, where they brought in the miniskirts, they got the booze, the booze cans to be a very naughty things to get into for youngsters with prohibition. We found the big families, like the Bronfmans in Canada, for instance, ran the booze industry. I mean, they're so wealthy, they even had a cruiser that went from Canada with the booze to Cuba, then into the States. And this is all allowed. You can't get away with this sort of crime, obviously, without permission from a top gang of somebody's. And then you... So I watched the fallout as I was growing up. Naturally, girls got pregnant. In the 20s, of course, they got pregnant, too. They didn't have the abortionists. They had to pay for abortions. The orphanages got stuffed with their children, unwanted children. And they didn't have antibiotics to kill off the venereal disease they promoted with the Charleston dance and all the music they were shoving out. And so they put it on the back burner, put our tax money, by the way, back into scientific research to come out with the pill just in time when they reintroduced the whole system in the 60s. Same system, by the way, exactly the same system. And if you go back into the 1920s, you'll find, early 20s, you'll find H.G. Wells talking about that, how to make society more promiscuous, to dissolve marriage altogether, which would dissolve the old cultures, to make people more pliable, more easily managed, and more easily directed into the new. Once a culture, you see, we're kind of like sheep or cattle grazing in a field. That's how people really are. We like sameness and tradition. It gives us a form of stability, you see, in our lives. And when it's disrupted, we start to stampede. When you're stampeded, the big boys at the top through all the media and entertainment too can guide the direction of the stampede, and you're in flux. Once you're in flux, you're easily downloaded with new ideas that which actually aren't yours, and they'll sound wonderful and so on. Most folk will follow it, and you end up with the planned society that we're now going dead ahead into so fast.
And then incredible. Once that planned society has come to fruition, then we're all fluxed.
That's right, we are. Well, we're pretty well there today, in fact, with the massive outburst of technology. People don't notice each other, even on trains or buses. So much so, just a few weeks ago in San Francisco, I think it was, a gunman got on a coach or a train. They actually have the video of them pulling the gun out, going behind different people's heads, walking down it. No one looked up from their iPads and their phones, and so, not a single person. And they shot a person in the back of the head eventually. That's... We're not involved in reality at all. And if you go into the writings of Marshall McLuhan, who predicted this phase would come, where it would simply be voices talking to other voices in the ether without physical contact, it's actually incredibly, it's here. And the change is
taking
place.
Could I ask? Can I ask, from your perspective, when you've seen this apparatus start to be set up, you've seen the deprecation of what it means to be human, you've seen the morality decay, you've seen all of these things happen. You're seeing, literally, like in slow motion, your entire species devolving, and you're actually aware of it. Is that awareness inherently traumatic? And if so, how do you deal with it?
It is traumatic because I had to understand, once I knew what was happening, or understood at least what was happening around me, I had to understand the causes. I looked into previous ages. I realized that big players, like Arnold Toynbee, for instance, in the 1930s at Oxford, who was a globalist and a world socialist. When they say socialist, by the way, they mean an ordered society run by an elite. That's what they mean by that. And he was all for that, and he taught many of the people who went up into world government areas or later United Nations. And he talked about the radical changes they'd have to make. By the way, that's where all British Commonwealth countries, if you have an NGO, non-governmental organization, after World War II, you would get a grant from the government if you stipulated that you were for radical change. If you didn't have a radical change in mind, you would get no grant. And radical meant complete alteration of your culture, even right down to genders, everything, and so on, and destruction of the family unit, etc., etc., etc. So we pay for our own destruction. The average taxpayer hasn't a clue. And I found this out just by going through life. I was in the music business, did a lot of session guitar work, did a lot of solo stuff too in concert, and played with some big bands. And I wrote a lot of songs too and sold them. And they buy everything up, including your copyright, by the way. That's okay. It's understood because you don't know if it's going to be a hit or not. But the fact is, I saw the machinery of the music business. And no one becomes a star without the business, the machinery, taking them over and deciding. No, I mean no one. And if they do pick someone, they can make anybody a star.
I interviewed an artist, and he said that the music business is not about the music. It's about business.
It's about social changing. And in fact, I can remember, in fact, it came down to all writers of music. And I worked with some big guys. Who got number ones and so on, and it came down for the writers from the top that you couldn't have any songs from now on with he or she in it to be gender neutral, and that was in the late 70s. And so these things get implemented into the songs. Most people don't think about it at all, but it's all there. All the messages are there, and then we've seen it plummet right all through the rock era, where lots of guys I knew were musicians, they couldn't get into certain bands because they wanted the gender-neutral look, which was almost effeminate, you know? So they called it heavy metal, with the tight, tight pants on and all the lipstick and so on. So I refused a few live shows, by the way, big world shows. I refused to dress up like that, you know? Because I often had to stand in for guys in tours and things like that. So I just said, no way. So that was what they projected to the young, getting you all ready for the present gender-bending society and so on. It was all done years ago. We don't realize that, never mind all the movies you watch that have all the PC stuff in it to upgrade you, you also get it through a lot of it through the music, until you're down to rap. And they love the little jokes at the top, because the rap means you wrap it up, it's ended. That's this bomb. That's what it means. And so now all you have now is women dancing on much music with hardly anything on, with simulated sex, and the youngsters think it's all normal, they all emulate it. If adults put on, and the moms and dads don't disapprove because they've been contaminated too, and that's a term, by the way, they used at the top, the society must become contaminated. Yuri Bezmenov also called it the same term, the ex-KGB guy who defected, with the contamination in the West. Their parents are contaminated, so the children watch it even more so.
That's true. You see on television in New Zealand in 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, when the 5 all the way through to 16-year-olds are coming home from school, turning on the television, and there we have rap videos with strippers simulating sex the entirety of the time. So not only, and I want to get your perspective on this, Alan, not only are we being hypersexualized and gender bent, but also I start to see a sexualization or early sexual indoctrination of children. Yep. Do you think this is in preparation for a pedophilia-friendly, elite-controlled future?
Oh, absolutely. Understand that the boys who behind this have been involved down through different centuries prior to this in creating revolutions. Most folk haven't a clue about the revolutions throughout Britain. You remember, too, Britain was one of the first countries that had a revolution. Most will forget that. Every major country that had a revolution for total change to get a small dominant minority to manage its affairs, including all its wealth and money. They always gave you red, white, and blue. You had France, the US, and so on. and Britain. So they always give you the same colours, because these are very ancient colours and coding. They go back all the way to Pythagoras. So they give you these little jokes amongst themselves and so on. But they've had so many revolutions, they know how to use them down through the ages. And the reason they bring in the Toynbees and professors of history and philosophies, like Professor Carl Quigley, who taught the State Department of the U.S., and the diplomatic course on cultures and histories and so on, is so important, because they go through history and what worked in the past. How did they get big changes through? If rebellions were in a brew, how do you avert rebellions? All of these things, and the big think tanks take that information and work on it night and day, 24 hours a day. Before they make any particular change, they work out every strategical move like a battle plan. If we do this, how will the public react to that? Certain segments will react A, some B, some C, and some D. Okay, how can we avert it? Okay, and they find ways to avert it, including sometimes putting your heroes out there before they've even made the first move. In other words, when something happens and everyone's complaining about something, oh, who can we talk about? Oh, they'll launch somebody who's got it all there for you. And you jump into it, and they lead you in circles for years. They're voting for this guy and voting for that guy. That's the con that they do. These guys have been at this for centuries.
They've got it down to a fine art.
Yes.
Manipulating human society is something they have almost perfected. What strikes me as very interesting, though, is some of the things that they do backfire to a degree, wouldn't you say?
Sometimes they'll expect all these things, actually. And sometimes, just to try, if people are kind of wisening up to something, they'll give you a temporary backfire, but they're going round in a different direction at the same time, which you know what noticed was complete. It's like laws that get struck down, and then they go round in a different fashion, put it through an omnibus bill with a different name, and you get it all the same. They never change their agenda. And I always say that, you know, if you read the big boys' books, and so, they tell you the whole future, and they never change the course that they're on. Don't forget, too, that Plato, way back in his day, he talked about human behavior. This is what the philosophers were into, because the elite at that time had a lot of time to chat about why they were the elite and why all the people down below were the people down below. And he said that if you understand human nature and what worked in the past, he said everything, therefore, is a formula to bring it up to making it work. And so if what's worked with people and they have gone along with, the people have gone along with in the past, if you use the right formula, you can change them in that direction again anytime down in the future.
Does that mean if they can send us down a bad path by manipulating us, does that mean we could manipulate ourselves in order to choosing a good path?
You can, primarily, if you understand what's happening. Most folk don't, because nothing is put across as being harmful to anybody, even the big changes. In fact, it's look at the sexual revolution. It's going to be fun, drugs and rock and roll. And everybody at that age went for it, because that's when their hormones were screaming. And it was like getting permission from the authorities and adults to go ahead and do it. When youngsters hear adults giving permission in such a way, they do it. Very few people wake up. Plus, you have to remember, peer pressure is counted on in every generation, again, amongst a particular target group. We're all categorized by age and by the big boys' plan, just like marketing, which is heavily involved in all of this too, and Bernays and the guys before Bernays. He didn't get it from Uncle Freud's books. It's old stuff. And they categorize what will work on you at 15 and 20 and 25 and 30 or 40. By the time you're 40, you start to realize you might be mortal. You haven't got the carrot you were promised that you're told to run. And you're not going to get it. And all you look forward to then is from the working towards your pension. So it's always the youth to use.
Yeah. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Alan Watt, Cutting Through the Matrix, is my guest.
Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that is all about business time. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest, who has got so many bright ideas, more bright ideas than a 100-watt light bulb, whose ideas will expose the lies and give you the truth that you were never told. Alan Watt from Cutting Through the Matrix, welcome back.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on. Yeah.
Now, you've had an extraordinary career in music. I didn't know that. And what I find very interesting about creative people is it's very unlikely that they'll actually be a psychopath, like a manipulator or something like that, and also doubly likely that they'll become victims of them who are trying to steal their good frickin' ideas. I'm wondering if you've had any personal experiences with these type of people.
I've met lots of the psychopaths who are in the higher management of the music industry. These guys are sharp. They read you before they speak to you, or you speak to them. They read you like they know you immediately. And I've seen them go for the young guys. People don't even understand that often they pick the guys out of lineups. They don't even know each other. They make them into a group. They give them a history which didn't exist. And the songs are all written in advance. They'll give them maybe four hits, and then they go away. I've seen all that happen. Session guys do all the work on records and albums for them. And that's the way it's managed. It's show business, remember. It's all show business. There's nothing out of show business you can believe. And I've seen these sharks, and they'll get young guys who sign their life away because they'll supply them with drugs. They'll supply them with lots of booze, lots of women. Put them up in big hotels, make them feel like they're stars. And it's not till the end, maybe the 3 or 4 years, they find out they haven't a penny in the bank that they own. It's all been signed away to other... you only get $3, you know. I think $3 per record, if it's an album. Then they have to have breakage fees come off of that. That can be one-third to two-thirds, because it always include a breakage fee, even if you don't have any. In it too. And then you've got other cuts come off. Until you're left with almost nothing, the guys who manage you and their cohorts that they work in the machinery of the entertainment business, they get most of the loot, you know. It's only a few guys that have been on the go for a long time once their contracts are up, if they can last that long and not kill themselves, that eventually get their own contract with their own lawyers for the next round go around. Like the Rolling Stones did that, in fact. That's how it's done. But these guys are definitely psychopaths. They could charm anybody, make you believe that you're the best, biggest thing in the world, play on the egos of the young, and when you've got all the women furnished to you, all the drugs, all the booze, the big cars, if nothing is in your name, of course, they'll start to believe it, and they're used. I mean, completely used. They're run out and thrown away. Yeah. That's the truth.
Is that part of a programming for our culture? Because I see now a lot of young former child stars that were kind of beacons of kind of hope and morality, you know, like the early Britney Spears and Katy Perry and so on and so forth. Then they get turned into these almost celebrity super whores overnight for some reason. Yeah. And as a result, you see all of these very good, clean-cut little girls and whatever who look up to these young women almost overnight themselves foresee a change in their own life and their own morality standard.
Yeah, and don't forget, too, it's not just the music industry. It works with the fashion industry, the magazine industries, which, again, are heavily into changing culture. Bernays said it, too, you know, to change society. And he got it from an old idea. It was way back thousands of years, actually. But he said that you always aim at the woman, young female, because they're more more willing actually to try something new, anything, experiment something new, as opposed to men who tend to be more conservative or stayed in their ways. So you do it through the women, and so back in about the 70s, they had about 90% magazines on the shelves, all aimed at women from all ages. Then you had all the specialists in those magazines telling them how to have their sex life, how affairs are good for you, what to do with your life, should you break up, should you have divorce, all these things were and women lapped that up and believed it. And now you have the Oprahs, etc., simply taken over from there. These are all put out there, these strong people.
Also, at the same time, I believe one of the leading feminist magazines in the 70s was directly financed by the CIA. And going back to what you said about going after the women, I think it might have been the Romans that said, if you want to control the men, you need to control the women. And if you want to control the women, threaten the children.
That's correct. What they did in ancient Greece, too, and in Rome, because when the aristocracy of Greece actually moved to Rome, they owned all the money and they created Rome and still ran the money system. But what they said was that they had to... if the guys were refusing to work or working slow, the slaves and so on, they told the women not to have intercourse with them at all, no sex, etc. And so our primary drive was cut off until they complied with their bosses or their managers or their owners, and then they would comply again. They did the same thing, by the way, in so-called democratic Britain and other places during miners' strikes in the 1950s. The government told them, the women, if you want money and the bed and the table, you tell your men to get back to work and just refuse them all their comforts, they said. This has been used down through history. They're all formulas and techniques which are never forgotten or was taught to these special folk in every generation. So this is old stuff. Adolf Hitler said, we'll bring in a form of totalitarianism because he says democracy will never work. And I understand what he meant by that. You really go into the writings of those who supposedly created democracy, which is a cover. But Adolf Hitler said, aim all the propaganda at the women because they want safety and security. Go over the head of the husband who's a provider and who's normally a strong figure until the country, those who lead the country are the strong figures, which is himself. So it says she will follow and therefore must follow the child. And so therefore must follow the husband. And so these are old techniques used down through the ages that people don't know.
What I see now happening in the New Zealand Parliament, at least, is a perforation of these very masculine women who come in and you expect them to be sort of the mother or nurturer, but what they're actually really there for is to instill these very ruthless policies that destroy family units, all the while saying, I used to be a single mother who benefited from this system of social catch nets and everything that we've got, and now I'm going to delete everybody's social catch net.
That's right. Well, also remember, don't forget that Lord Bertrand Russell, who was given charge of the Macy Group that came in from Europe, fled from Hitler, in fact, and set up in the U.S., and he was also put into the Vienna School that also came over, and you had the Frankfurt School. He was working with these globalists to create a brand new culture for the world. He was given authority by the President of the United States because those who'd fled Germany and all those countries claimed that they were afraid that the West, especially America, would become fascist or Nazi itself. So they were given complete coverage to do whatever they wanted to do, and they went to work. These boys flooded in from Eastern Europe and all through universities right through the 60s, and then they fomented for revolution in the 60s, and that's when it all broke out in the U.S. especially.
And now what you see is that same sort of scheme. Like you'll see a number of think tanks, groups, non-governmental organizations, and they all wind up at some point down the chain, have some form of connection.
Yep.
And I've come up with this theory. I'd like to get your take on it probably after the break. You know, the fractal universe theory, it's all a hologram and everything that you look into, you see the same pattern repeating.
Yes.
Well, I've come to see all of this negativity and all of this lies, deception, enslavement of the human race as a form of scumbaggery. And with each form of scumbaggery, you tend to look into it, one particular scumbag, one particular instance of scumbaggery. Then the closer you look, the pattern starts to repeat and you see even more scumbaggery branching off to the sides in an infinitely repeating pattern. I called it fractal scumbaggery. And that seems to be the nature of our very reality today, to me.
It is, but also the boys in the 20th century especially who carried this movement forward from previous generations and centuries, they got in the top scientists, you see. Science was to take place, replace all gods, basically. And a form of secular humanism was to get promoted by the United Nations. That all happened as well. And they said that eventually, and Bertrand Russell said this, Lord Bertrand Russell, he said eventually the public will be unable to do anything, even change, he called it nappies, a diaper for a baby, without the expert advice from a professional. That's happened in my lifetime.
It seems to be growing in speed, size, and scope. And it makes people very worried that if they don't fight back very, very soon in order to expose what is happening and to teach people the real truth about how the world is really run, we may not get another shot at overthrowing them, because this could be possibly the worst, most overarching, most incredible scheme of control, global control, ever thought out and implemented. So instead of the normal, we beat them, they beat us, and they beat us again, and so on and so forth, it might just be them winning forever. So it's best a good idea to fight, I think. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, of Alan Watt.